Good morning, everybody. It's Wednesday. It is the 21st of May. Cold start to the day today. And I don't mean just because of the weather. Some substation was blown up, caught fire, sabotaged. I don't know what it was near my house. So I woke up yesterday and there was no power. I thought, oh, well, that'll be all right. I've got some solar. I'll be fine. But then I forgot that my solar wasn't connected to my geyser. So cold water for the next few days until they sort that problem out, and it might even be like weeks.
Do you Portuguese shower?
Hello, Al.
How are you?
Oh, by the way, everybody, here's Alan Ford.
It's Alan Ford. It's good to be with you. Good morning to you, and to you, and especially to you.
So what were you saying, Portuguese shower?
Yeah, you know, you put
I had a cold shower this morning. It was horrible. But it wakes you up, hey?
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people who fell for that trend when it was a thing. Remember, there was everybody hopping into
cold ice
plunges and cold. I never got into that.
I'm not into that either.
I can do it. I hate it. I was in there for just long enough to get all the things clean that needed to be cleaned, and then I got the hell out of there.
See, I'll go in as Ellen and come out as Elaine. Everything's disappeared.
But you've been all over the place as usual. Alan has 14 holidays a year.
Yeah, a few.
He doesn't even fight me on it anymore. The only person I know, the only people I know who have more holidays than you are my brother and sister-in-law and their kids.
I love that.
Yes, they have holidays. They have one a month at least.
So let me tell you, let's just get to the theorem behind this. Number one,
I'm not criticizing it, by the way.
No, but there's a double home income.
Right.
Two men. We don't have dogs. We don't have children.
Right.
When your brother or people start the beginning of the year, they're paying 200,000 rand just for school fees.
Sure.
Okay. Then we've got to buy school clothes and pencils and tutu dresses that are so expensive and kids are expensive, so we have no kids. Then the great thing about our computers is that we can work on our phones. It's not easy to work anywhere in the world.
Anywhere, yeah.
You could really work.
So you could be one of those semi-digital nomads.
So I'm often working.
Yeah.
Wherever I go. And then something dawned on me, which I find, you know, we all say we wait till we're 65 or 70 to start traveling.
Sure.
Now, Gareth.
No, by then you're old.
Do you know
and everything...
what you want to climb up the Acropolis when you
no.
You know, there's still no lift up there.
I know. I was there last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible, but you've got to walk through that.
And I saw a lot of old people struggling.
And they tease you because you don't realize you're walking through lots of restaurants and shops, but up a hill like this to get to this Acropolis, which is amazing, absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And with one tree and no shade. do I want to do that at 70?
I don't think you're wrong. No, listen, I'm not criticizing.
Christ the Redeemer. I did it now. Are we going to walk up Christ
you
the
went,
Redeemer?
You went up that mountain with that statue of Jesus. And I mean, I know that you're on a diet at the moment.
Yes.
But that must have been exhausting.
No, we had cable cars there. There we had a plan.
Oh, you didn't have to walk
all
that? Because that's quite a steep.
You go through a forest. Oh, I mean, it's But like, you know, all these people jumping on Table Mountain, running up that lion's head.
No, I don't have time for that.
I'm saying to you, I'm going to wait till 70 to start seeing the world.
Mm-mm.
No ways.
So
and we have to walk. You know, we wherever you go, you walk. It's lekker.
Sure.
It's nice.
Well,
to walk
otherwise,
on the
you
streets,
don't see things. Yeah.
Freedom. It's all lekker. But so I think, you know, let's get this done now and rather live for the moment. We know life is short.
So where did you go? Brazil,
Argentina, and Brazil.
We've got. Don't we have the window seat today? Not today, it's next week. So we do this thing with travel.co.za and we talk about local and international travel and what people's favorite places are to go and, you know, just fascinating locations all over the world. You'd love it. And, I mean, Brazil, specifically Rio, I've never been to Rio. I've been to Sao Paulo.
Sure.
But other than that, I haven't done any of South America. And everybody tells me Argentina is just spectacular.
So I've got to describe both because I think for our viewers and our listeners to understand why these places are so incredible, this continent firstly, is a whole mix, very similar to South Africa. You go to Buenos Aires, you got a lot of Italians that are mixed with locals, with Spanish. You've got the whole bunch of people, okay, Dutch. And then what's absolutely incredible, Darren, Gareth, is that this city is, it's got the tango. It is magnificent. It's beautiful. Lots of great restaurants. It's got history. It's got, they had a whole tour on Dante's Inferno. And the incredible
my cousin just got back from Mexico, and he said something so lovely. I mean, he had a couple of kind of hookups, I suppose, with these Mexican girls.
Hookups. Mm.
Yeah, Mexico. He said Mexico. If you think passion is dead,
no.
If you think romance is dead, you're wrong. He says go to South and Central America, and people dance, they kiss in the street, they sit on park benches
insane.
And hug each other.
It's
There's
insane.
Music playing everywhere. That each city or town has its own square, and they set up food and drinks, and people are dancing and just having a wonderful time. To me, that sounds a hell of a lot more exciting than this duh like work ethic we've got.
So let's now go to Brazil. Brazil is the land of the free.
Mm.
I went there 24 years ago. I think you remember at the time. Those years to Carnival with my mate Lyle.
Oh my God.
Insane.
That was
that was
ages ago.
It was just excellent. It was superb. And now went again. Went to a little town called Buzios on the coast. It was cobblestone streets with music and passion. And obviously it's Carnival, so it's packed with people because everyone's off to this phenomenal celebration. And they have this blocker parties. So Carnival, what happens is take Ellis Park, cut it in half, and then the Samba Drone basically is a street, which runs for a kilometer. And, of course, the people come down for – we're talking about – now, I want you to think about this. 10 to 20,000 people in a Samba school with floats the size of half of Disneyland's castle. Okay, that comes through the street. And 10 floats per school, six schools in a show, in a day, in a night, starting at 8 p.m., finishing at 7 o'clock in the morning. And it's just rock and music and dancing and going. I have never experienced something like that. Okay, and I'm sober this time. So now I'm going to all the biggest party in the world sober and watching this. Last time I don't remember too clearly, but this time I remembered everything. And it is just incredible. It's incredible to see these blocker parties. So these blocker parties, basically, they just decide, we say on the corner of Santon Drive and William Nicol, we're having a blocker. And what happens is a school comes with a truck and it's got people dancing on it. And then everyone goes to this blocker, about 5,000 to 10,000 people. And all the informal traders are busy selling caparinhas and hot dogs and whatever you want to buy, all these types of crazy things. And then you've got people dancing on the streets. And then one minute you see two girls kissing and two boys kissing and a husband and wife kissing and the husband and wife kissing the two girls and the two boys. And it's just
sounds
it's
wild.
It's wild, but it's free and it's interesting to see. And here's the secret: it's beautiful. It's the banking system's a third world, so you can't use your Uber sometimes. It's the same price as South Africa.
Mm.
So now, you went to Greece last year, right? Yeah. So did I. So here's the thing. You go to Greece. It used to cost us €50 in Mykonos to go from the hotel to the beach. And €50 back. That's $1,000.
Yeah.
There it costs you R90 to get to the to do what you got to do. It's South African prices.
Yeah, that's good. That's good value.
And SAA flies directly, and I'm not punting the airline for any reason, but flies directly to São Paulo. So why wouldn't we consider, instead of going north, just...
And costing yourself 20 times, would it? Yeah.
Exactly. So it is a wonderful, beautiful... And that's just the start. I can't wait. So next year, now we're booked already, now we plan.
Four?
We don't know yet, but there'll definitely be Rio, because it's just wild. It's making the you know, Gareth, when you're sitting... You know, you walk, someone walks past you, girl or guy, and you go, oh my God, that's a 9 out of 10. It's a 10 out of 10. No, I mean, your eyes.
I mean, the Brazilians have a reputation
for being.
You have
never seen the bodies
really?
And beauty. And it's magnificent. Huh. Now, hold a second. Do you know that by day five, the 10 out of 10s are like, ugh, this is boring. And then you're looking for 15 out of 10s. And then you come across like 20, 15 out of 10s. And then you look at like.
Do you think we're an ugly country by comparison?
We're beautiful. We're beautiful here. We're actually really great. But we're like sevens.
I mean people.
We're sevens and eights. We're sevens and eights.
Oh, okay, really?
Those are tens and twelves out of ten.
Yeah.
I've traveled this world. I've never seen people like this. Hot. Everybody's got a tango on. I'm not the guys, the girls. Everyone on the beach, the bums, the asses. Mm.
So it always became Dirk straight. Kutsia says Argentina's a great country, friendly people, amazing place, and cheap enough.
He's right.
And then people saying, "You are gay," in the comments. Yes, but obviously we've spoken about this many times before.
You what?
You know the meme with "You are gay." Why are you gay?
Why are you gay?
Yeah, him. Right. Obviously, we would be hugging and kissing if our economy did a total 180.
Argentinian economy has been very interesting because it's always doing insane things.
Yeah.
That's
they've got a great president now.
Now.
Javier Milei, yeah.
So they've got a great. But you never know, next week the coup comes again. They have a coup every week. But we're not here. We're not going there for a political discussion.
No, sure.
You know, we're going there to
but
have
fun. But you want the place to not be a total shit show.
No, of course not. But there are sometimes shit shows.
No.
But that's sometimes the best places to go and have fun. Not Gaza, but I mean, do you understand? No, I'm not making light of that. I'm just saying, do you understand what I mean?
Oh, you're not going to go on holiday to Gaza?
Not yet. When he puts his Trump Towers, I don't
You're not going to go to Gaza?
No, but you catch me.
By the way, speaking of which, today's the big day.
It is the big day.
Today's the day that our president goes to the headmaster's office and has to explain himself. So it's going to be lots of fun. Apparently Marco Rubio's in tow. And Cyril's taking a big delegation of, I think, four ministers. And
Johann Rupert's with him.
He's got Johann Rupert coming, Ernie Els, you know, because he's trying to schmooze Trump, because Ernie Els is a golfer. Johann Rupert loves golf. So Trump loves golf. I mean, to talk about golf. Golf is the greatest.
Let's talk. You know, I think it's billionaires talking to billionaires. I think your language changes. You learn a new language. It's a new vibe.
I'm sure there is.
It's a new, you know, so. It's not us plebs talking. It's billionaires now talking to billionaires. And I think that makes it a bit of a difference because these are all a bunch of billionaires who can actually have a conversation and say, okay, listen, we now control our countries. We're all billionaires. It's a billionaires club and they can actually start to talk to one another. So, I heard your comments about refugee status and all that stuff. I was looking at that... those people that landed in the United States from South Africa. I'm telling you, I shot an insert in Sasselburg, and I'm sure one of the guys was the car guard. I remember him. I'm telling you, that guy was the car guard from Sasselburg.
It's amazing to me.
There are lots of car guards in Sasselburg. But I'm going to tell you, those people on that airplane were most certainly not hardworking farmers that were...
Of
course not.
Probably not. But you know how you know you're a refugee? If you think you're a refugee. Once you have given up and you think that the country that you're in is not a good place for you and your children to be, and you decide to go somewhere else and somewhere else will accept you, guess what you're called? A refugee.
But if we look at a lot of South Africans, so we've got expats all over the world, there are plenty of people watching right now, and we've got them in Australia, and we've got them in... the UK and in America and South America, Germany, Dutch, in the Netherlands, everywhere. Mm. Firstly, a lot of the time the guys have gone there because they've worked, they've got brains. They've gone because for work opportunities, for different opportunities, they get great jobs.
And let's not kid ourselves.
And
they've seen that it would be better for them
for their kids.
Terms of their starting their business, their children, whatever. Or they've survived some horrible family tragedy here. Yeah. That happens too.
That has happened. But they've gone there with some sense. They go with money.
Sure.
Or a little bit of money. They don't just do the great sick. What's the foot
sick? Is that what you're calling
it? The great sick. The great sick. They do the great sick.
Okay, but here's what I want to ask
you.
People, And I know
if
you,
I had nothing, I would do it, yes.
I know you to be an empathetic person.
Yeah.
And I know you're one of those people who would never be mean to someone who's poor or
no,
who comes from
not.
A country where there's genocide.
No, of course
not. That that's what's happened with these guys, right? But it seems okay to hate, like, poor whites. And I've said this on the show before sometimes, too. It's like we create a different category in our heads, and it becomes perfectly okay for people to say, and I mean, I do it. You know, car guards. We joke about the Sasselberg car guard or whatever, because you and I think that's funny. But we would never say that about someone from Gaza or Somalia, would we?
Well, let's...
And we've got lots of refugees in this country. They just don't call themselves refugees.
We actually have refugees in this country.
Well, we have some, but they're not... We don't have a refugee program in South Africa like they do in America. We've got illegal immigrants up the hilt, and that's because there are countries that are worse than us, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
This the whole Syrian debacle.
Sure. But I do need to understand why so many people are so hit up about these. It's less than 50 people as far as I can tell. Right. 49 people. Yeah. And this country, certain parts of it, especially the left, have lost their mind. And I can't help thinking it has something to do with the fact that some people are very married to the idea of being victims. It's important. It's a valuable part of their identity to be a victim. Mm-hmm. And if you use a word like refugee or previously disadvantaged or whatever the particular appellation is that they prefer to choose for themselves, you're almost attacking their value system at its roots, because you're saying to them, oh, my God, these people who look like they're toothless car guards from Sasselberg or whatever, and it's fine to be mean to them. It's not fine to be mean to a Gazan refugee or a Somalian refugee. And it's a double standard, and that bothers me.
But I do want to say the following. So I don't want to call these people refugees. I want to call them opportunists.
Sure.
They've taken an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get that right. They're opportunists. So these are great opportunists.
Yeah.
So this is the great tech of opportunists. Okay.
But I mean,
which is fine.
Okay,
which
I see serious. I see serious news organizations.
Which is cool to do if you want to do that.
And I say serious news organizations in inverted commas because I don't believe that IOL or News 24 or what's the other one, Times Live, are real news services anyway. I think they've been degraded and debased so badly. They have about as much credibility as, you know, whoever the doctor was who told us Biden was fine. So they're all going into the stories of each of these refugees. First of all, I'm not that interested in them. I don't know about you. But they're going into the story trying to find out whether or not they have a good enough case to have been. Let me tell you something. That is such low-level... Yeah, we don't have any stories to tell anymore, journalism. It's just outrageous to me. I mean, these are miserable people.
We would have had them on the show.
I don't know, hey?
We would have.
I don't know.
20 years ago, we would have had them on. I produced you. We did the show together. We would have had
would
these
we
people.
Have? Would we have wanted
yeah.
to?
Yeah, we would have talked to, we spoken to them before they left, as they landed. We would know everything about them.
Because I saw Annika Larson is in Washington, ENCA's Annika Larson. And as Cyril's car drove away, you can go and see my ex Twitter if you want to go and see it. And as his car drives in, he gets out of the car. Annika, this is a supposed journalist, right? And I've never had a problem with Annika before. I think she's quite professional. She's like, halala, Mr. President, halala. And I was like, Jesus, that is so lame. It's just so lame. You know, I don't see anyone who calls themselves a serious journalist behaving in a sycophantic way like that, except when it comes to one side of the political aisle. And again, I think it has to do with his value system. I think that part of why Cyril's there and part of why this is a major thing, you know, I watched a fantastic clip yesterday from a guy who says that this is the beginning of the end of the ANC because they've never actually been held to account like adults. In the first 10 years of our new dispensation in this country, the ANC were rightly given a fairly wide berth in order to put into practice all the things they'd promised. They had great leaders like Nelson Mandela and Thabo Mbeki and so many others at that stage who were doing an an unbelievable job of trying to keep this idea of a rainbow nation together, and growing the economy. Thabo had it at 6-7% growth year on year for at least 3 years of his presidency. And then along came the middle decade with Jacob Zuma, and now this last almost decade with Cyril, and he's been there in the shadows the whole time as well. First of all, making tons of money as the biggest BEE recipient in the country. And second of all, as a very lackluster president who not only couldn't put his mask on properly during COVID, but forced us to follow all kinds of stupid rules in lockdown, has not managed to steer the ship in any positive direction. He's ruined the ANC. Well, it's been ruined under his leadership. And they're never held to account like adults, because it's always, oh, but, you know, 30 years ago and apartheid and all this stuff, and nobody cares anymore. It's like you go to Germany now. You ask the average German about the Berlin Wall and communism, they'll say, this was a long time ago. Mm. But for some reason, we've been given a free pass. And white liberals in Western Europe have had a lot to do with that, because they are so desperate to ingratiate themselves, because it makes them look good and they can talk at dinner parties about how they're helping Africans. This is what they like to do. They're patronizing beyond belief. That they come here like Ursula von der Leyen from the EU not so long ago. And then they sit and they rub shoulders with and laugh and glad hand each other at these dinners with people like Cyril Ramaphosa. And then they leave feeling like they've done something good for the, just like when you give a car guard R5. That's how they feel about Africa, these white liberals in Western Europe and even in America. And then suddenly when you get a guy like Trump who goes, actually, we're not the world's piggy bank anymore. I'm shutting down USAID because we're handing out not money to, and we're not shutting it down because we want to stop people who are suffering from HIV/AIDS. We're shutting it down because there are unbelievable amounts of corruption and fraud happening here, where the American taxpayer has to foot the bill for a whole bunch of bullshit that doesn't help Americans at all. And then people say, oh, but Trump's so mean. It's unbelievable to me that this is the dichotomy that lives inside of everybody's head. And they're just unable to make sense of it. And then when a few white people, less than 50 of them, decide that they're refugees because there's this exception made by executive order under Donald Trump, people in the news media in South Africa lose their minds. They're like, oh, but they're not refugees.
You know, it's not about, you know, so I wanted to tell you a story. It happened yesterday. Our boxer that we do training with is a guy called Joe. And he told us a story. It had nothing to do with this. And he explained to me how when he was in Central Congo, because his mom was half Hutu and Tutsi, she was murdered in front of his eyes at the age of 5.
Yeah, and the genocide.
And that's in the same, and that's we're talking about now.
92.
Yeah. And then what happened was they wanted to rape his sisters. And his dad paid. This is the story I'm being told last night. His dad paid them some money. And they said, if you don't have the balance by the next day, this is what's going to happen. So his mom is dead. So there's this boy, 5 years old, and there's his mother that's passed. He's been killed in front of him, murdered. Okay, and all of a sudden they then got into a car and managed to hop the border into Zambia. And then he landed up in South Africa, and he became a great boxer. He's won a few titles, and he's a champion of a human being. That, to me, I consider a refugee. They had to flee because, you know, the Gazans are refugees. They have... There's been, so I'm
so
worried.
I'm worried that we've taken this
word refugee, and given it to these opportunists. Okay, and good on them on taking the opportunity, because why not? You know, if someone said to me, "Hey, Alan, I'm going to give you a passport, you can get yourself some. You don't have to go stand in the line waiting for visas."
Sure,
I mean, terrible
Trump's
thing
giving out this gold card status, which he wants to do all over the world, where if you pay, I think it's $5 or $6 million, you can become a citizen.
Yeah.
Well, and it goes straight into the treasury.
We're there in Portugal, you buy land, it's all over the place. Okay, great. So we've got all that type of stuff happening. So all of a sudden, so why would you say no if that's what
you... And if you've got nothing.
If you have nothing.
I mean, if you 100%. Have a... And again, I agree with you from the point of view that if you have a huge commercial farm and you're a successful farmer and you're tremendously well off and you really know what you're doing, why would you give that up to go and, you know...
And Gareth, we know that there are people that... The farm murders are a disgrace.
Yeah.
And we know that's
a real thing.
Okay, so that's
and we know that there are politicians running around chanting kill the Boer. And we know that there's stupid legislation like BEE, which benefits nobody but the top ANC people. It's hurtful to the whole country. So it's not just for white Afrikaners. You know?
But we're saying that the 49 people that went there are not refugees.
Who cares about the definition of refugees? Yeah, you're a refugee if you're seeking refuge from the place that you come from because you don't want... You don't want to live there anymore and because you think you're unsafe. Those people think that. You know, lived experience, this crap that leftists always tell you? That's their lived experience.
That's cool to say that, but I mean, to be honest...
I think it's nonsense.
I think it's opportunist.
No, look. I think refugee... If I were running country X and there was a person coming in from country Y and they were a refugee, I'd say, sorry, gates closed. Our country's full. I'm here to look after the people of my country. You're not getting in. So... I'm not a fan of refugees in the first place, and I wouldn't be able to run the UN. What is the United Nations?
It's
Commission for Refugees or something. I'd be the worst person to run that.
Yeah, because everyone would just be thrown into the sea.
These guys consider themselves
But I'll end on this point: that what I do think Donald Trump thought he might be getting is because I do believe what happened with Robert Mugabe, those were refugees. Those farmers. Okay, that was a refugee. Those were people that the cattle was slaughtered, their tobacco farms were half burnt. I mean, if you remember, we go back to how we did those stories back 20 years ago.
No, sure.
Okay.
Well documented.
And those guys, so they would have brought a wealth of experience to the... So I think Donald Trump thought to himself, hold on, we're going to get a wealth of experience here with these guys. Meantime, these people have never even seen the light of a farm in their life. The only thing they're going to get is to be able to say, reverse the tractor.
Yeah, someone here says, Bitcoin Bird says, Alan will eat his own words. You would also take the first flight out if... You were under threat. Okay, so then
threat where?
So, okay.
It's where we're under
let's
threat.
Let's just go back to that because it relates to something Magellis says here. There is genocide because of a song. What happened to free speech? So, okay. Usually when you say you're going to kill a group of people, which is precisely what that song says, just literally, you don't have to be figurative about it and say, oh, well, it's a great struggle anthem and blah, blah, blah. So you're going to kill people. Remember, genocide is not an event. It's a process, and I don't think that there's a genocide going on here. In fact, everybody who is throwing around the word genocide are the people on the left and in the international community who don't believe that these guys are refugees. No one who is on their side is saying the word genocide. It's not something which people believe is happening. Trump said it, remember? And I don't think Trump's misinformed, Al. I don't think he's sitting there in the White House blissfully unaware of what's going on in the world. He's got the most unbelievable security and information network in all of human history at his disposal. Hundreds of thousands of information gathering units all over the world.
Yeah.
They've got the best technology available to man. You think he doesn't know what's going on?
You
think he needs News 24 to figure out how South Africa works?
I think he's cooked. But that's
you think he's cooked?
That's another story for another day. But all I'm saying is coming back to eat your own word. Would I leave? Do you know what? If I could get myself a Portuguese passport, I'm not Portuguese, but you know, why wouldn't I? You know, because I don't stand
in
line
to get it. If these farmers were black, would it even have made headlines?
Yeah, it would have made headlines. Under these circumstances, yes.
You think so?
And yeah.
Because there are, of course, there are black farm murders.
And they're black Afrikaans farmers, by the way.
Of course there are.
So they could maybe go.
It's a very small subset of a
subset.
But
they could go.
But yeah.
And there are lots of
talent. But I'm just wondering why it is a particular kind of howl that we're hearing from one side. Because it's sort of like a mask off moment.
Because I think it's a mockery to what is actually going on in so many places.
It's a threat to some people's worldview of the victim hierarchy, which is so central to their belief system.
It's
like the virgin birth or the resurrection is central to Christianity.
It's a mockery to what genuine suffering.
Well, then Trump's not so stupid because he's mocking the enemies of Western civilization. In which case, those 49 people don't mean anything to him either. And they need to know that. And I'm not particularly fussed about them either way, but it is interesting to watch the reaction. And if the reaction is going to send people on that side of the political argument into madness, then I'm thrilled with it. Then I hope there are lots more stories like this year.
Well, we're in for an interesting year. We've got a new pope.
Yeah. Habemus Papem, Al.
Yes.
You happy about this new pope, American guy? Leo the
14th.
14th.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was... Well, this was very interesting to watch. I must tell you, as a Catholic,
it didn't take so long, hey?
Huh?
It didn't take so many
turns.
It
didn't take so long.
It was only, what, 2 days?
2 days.
I turned on
days,
the TV, suddenly I see we've got a new
white
pope.
Smoke. Yeah. Here we go. I do love the way this has been covered because it's so Western. So unlike popes in the past from Europe, you don't know much about them. When Pope John Paul became the Pope from Poland, no one went to go and speak to his sister.
No.
Okay. No one went to go speak to Pope Francis' sister in Argentina. Here we've got an American-speaking Pope who loves the Cubs or the Sox, one of the two. I think it's the Sox. I get confused. And all of a sudden, his brothers are on the news media and his nieces and the girl that he kissed in high school. I mean... And I loved how this became an American story, a Western story. All of a sudden, we know about the Pope. We know we've got some more intel.
Yeah.
He speaks English. He speaks 8 languages actually. And I thought that this whole thing went down was really quite interesting. And I think that I think there's going to be a lot of interesting things that come from this.
Yeah, and I think people also try to politicize the papacy, but it's primarily a spiritual thing, and they're obviously because it's a country,
It holds both. I mean, of course, that's the purpose of it. It's to be godly. I mean, that's why you're there. Yeah. I mean, but I think it's been fascinating.
Well, apparently they were also going through his tweets and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
I mean, when did a Pope have tweets before?
Tweets.
They became Pope.
And what he said about Vance and about Trump and he said about, it's fascinating because he spoke out as a cardinal when asked about certain things. But I think we're into a very interesting age because I think we've got a very modern person. We are in the 21st.
I know you're very pro South Africa. So there are two things that we've also got to celebrate this with. Three things actually.
Mm.
So first of all, we did very well at the African Cup of Nations. Is that right, James? Yeah, gold medals. I do have to ask this though. We'll get to the other two things we did really well in a second. Why is Danny Yordan still a thing? I mean this with all the charity I can muster. He stands there. He comes through at the airport like he's a celebrity. He's got his sunglasses on. All the players, who are the actual celebrities, seem to be enthralled to him. I don't know if he actually pays them directly with brown envelopes. He's got sunglasses on. No one else has sunglasses on.
It's fascinating.
He's been accused of all kinds of hideous behavior with women and corruption, and yet he's still there.
But isn't it that,
he's like a blue tick on a dog's ass.
When do we take our leave?
I think it's time for him to go.
Do you understand? It's time to take your leave.
You've done very well, Danny. You've made a lot of money.
It's time to take your leave.
You've got a lot of attention for being a sleazy football boss. Yeah. Just get out now. Yeah, it's time for you to go.
No, maybe
it's enough. Yeah. Anyway, well done to our team because they did very well. The other two things are we won the world's strongest man competition.
That was great.
Did you see this guy?
Afrikaners.
Massive guy. Massive. He pulls fucking Afrikaners, trucks.
Yeah. All the Afrikaners.
And we won a gold medal at the Chelsea Flower Show.
And how beautiful.
So, I mean, what a contrast, right? From the world's strongest man who can pull like a cruise liner. And then on the other side, A guy who makes a nice God.
He goes, I'm as happy as a sunflower and gay. Yes. So
I think that's cool.
So I think those are three cool things. Yeah. Also, we're celebrating some other great things this week. We've got SA Style Awards.
Oh, you're big on this. Didn't you host it last
year? I'm hosting it again this year.
You're hosting it again.
With Vanessa Carrera.
Very good. Petrulis. Love Vanessa.
We love Vanessa. She's got a great... She's another brave, wonderful South African. You know?
Yeah, she's incredible.
Been through a rough time, lost her husband with four kids in COVID. He was young. Chris Petrulis, a friend of ours, Gareth.
Yeah, of course.
You know him well.
He was like the,
God rest
the man.
Him.
Yeah.
And he was the man. But you know what she did? She went and she went and did she's a pastry chef.
Oh.
So she started a business called Like Home. And she cooks in her kitchen and she does these online things. And so I'm so honored to be hosting with her. And so we're going to honor some great South Africans. And you know, the Style Awards is great because I've
where
been
do you do it?
Involved for 20 odd years, Gareth. And I'll tell you why I find.
No, where do you do it?
So it's held at the Southern Sun in Hyde Park on the deck. So it starts in the Hyde Park shopping center so people can come and view all the people, red carpet, the whole vibe. A little bit like the Met. It's not 100%, but it's like South Africa's our very own little Met. But the whole process of the Style Awards is to go and award people who are innovators and people that have
you
really.
You get nervous about what to wear yourself because it's the Style Awards you're hosting.
It's not about what you dress. So it's not a fashion competition. It's about innovation in your category.
So what are you wearing?
A black tie. I wear a black tie, you know. I wear a black tie.
Keep it simple, keep it slim.
Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say? Keep it simple, keep it slim. And so it's happening, nice prizes for the winners, and it's a lovely competition to acknowledge innovation in South Africa in various industries. For example, who is going to be the icon this year? It's Connie Ferguson. And a phenomenal trend setter and trend leader in the film acting
actor,
industry.
Producer,
you know, she's a legend. Mm. Last year we had Dr. John Carney.
Right.
The year before, Sipho Hot Six Mabuza.
All people who've been around since the 70s.
But they've done some really great things.
Sure.
And
I'm
so
glad they're honored.
So we're honoring South Africa, people who've done well in business, in media, in innovation, in the next big thing, which looks trendsetters. So it's top couples. It's a great event.
Dirk in the comments has just reminded me, the guy who was the strongest man in the world, Rayno Nell, he's from Upington.
Upington.
Oh.
The Northern Cape.
Yeah.
A province that is so often forgotten.
He played rugby for the Cheetahs? Okay. Well, there we go. I didn't know. I wouldn't have known this guy, but you see, he's also not the biggest man on the planet because there were other oaks in this competition who were even bigger than him. So sometimes it's not how enormous you are and how strong you look, because this guy is the strongest man in the world. So don't mess with South Africans.
No, and that's Andrikus is killing people.
He's fantastic.
He's great.
Yeah.
So we see.
All right. So Style Awards.
We got a
look at this dude.
Yeah. Wow.
Jesus.
Yeah. That's strong.
And those are not balloons filled with air, by the way.
That's a strong man.
It's very, very heavy stuff.
But you see, I think Trump is thinking he's getting this guy. This is
maybe,
the guy.
Maybe you're right.
I'm getting
we
a
need
strong,
more strong people. Strong. I like strong.
Afrikaans,
yeah.
You know, you get up 5 o'clock in the morning and they plow the field because I'll tell you something now. Farmers are South African. In this country, farmers around the world, but I'm going to talk about, they are incredible.
Mm.
Our farmers, I did a show or segments for a show for CakeNet, a period of time on agriculture and with the farmers.
Yes.
You have, I mean, what these guys do are incredible. I mean, you know, you arrive at Woolworths and you get that beautiful chicken.
Yeah.
Okay. Where do you think that damn thing come from?
Yeah.
Where do you think those beautiful, plump, beautiful grapes come from, or that lovely orange? It comes from these people that get up 5 o'clock in the morning and put their heart and soul into farming the land and praying for rain or praying for less rain. And that have got great values and in many ways. And these are hard workers, like this guy that can pick up a zillion kilos. Now, hold on, I ask this question. That's what Trump thinks he's getting.
Maybe.
He thinks he's getting that guy. He thinks he's getting Mr. Nell.
Meanwhile, he's getting a car guy. Meantime, he's getting,
I don't know, he's getting some dude that's got no teeth, the toothless wonder. But it's do you understand that?
Yeah.
So I really, heads off to the guys that are doing well in South Africa. And, I've got to give it to them. Our farmers are very powerful.
No, I agree with you, and I think that they've achieved amazing things. And remember, there are parts of this country that are hugely fertile, like KZN, for example. But there are also parts of it, the Karoo, that these guys make
garlic.
It's unbelievable what they can grow there.
And lamb.
Lamb. And, I mean, we've got the finest lamb in the world. But these sheep eat there.
It's
and we
amazing.
End up with the best lamb in the world.
It's incredible. And so. Yeah, there's lots of interesting things that are going to be happening. And if Elon Musk brings that project here, we're going to have that.
Which
province would you put it in?
I saw something funny. Well, we need it all over. They're talking about how...
In that Northern Cape is nothing
vast.
Going on there.
No, there's nothing there. There are only about 10 people.
We should put it there.
What for those 10 people?
Lots.
There was a story in the news yesterday about how, this is kind of one of the aces in the deck of cards that Cyril's got. He's going to offer some special deal to Elon. First of all, I don't think that guy's particularly interested in a special deal. It's not like he's after the money. I think he's got a problem with what he sees as unfairness, because I watched an interview with him yesterday. And he doesn't let the journalists get away with nonsense. This woman says to him, I've heard that they're going to offer you a special exception, so you don't have to comply with the BEE legislation and the fact that you need 30% black ownership to start a company in South Africa, and they'll make an exception for you. And he said, do you think that's right? And the woman's, well, that's, I don't worry about what I think. He's like, no, but do you think it's right?
So this guy,
I don't think you could bribe him. He's got more money than most countries do.
Well, yeah, he's got close to 400 million.
He didn't care if it's 250,000 South Africans going to use Starlink or one.
But I do. But now, what is interesting? Have you been watching these things? Are they no friend? Him and Trump are not friends anymore.
Oh please, this is nonsense.
But I'm talking. But I'm telling you now that the billionaires have another language.
Yeah, they do.
Let's just leave it at that. Let's understand that when you got your own planes and your own trains and your own ships and yachts and you've got whatever you've got.
Would you want to be that rich?
Yes.
That was a quick answer, yeah.
No, why not?
You'd want to be that rich. And what would you do with your money if you were that rich? Because you see them all trying to influence politics. I mean, here's Elon, who gives up running his companies to go and take a government job, effectively,
and lose.
I wouldn't do that. Would you?
And look what happened to his company. In the matter of 100 days, that company started crashing. People were Bette Midler's burning a Tesla. I mean,
Bette Midler's about a nutcase.
I'm just giving it. She didn't burn it; she sold it. But it's
she is a complete raving lunatic. She's a chocolate fireplace. That woman. But tell me,
great.
What would you do? If you were suddenly a multi billionaire, yeah, like money's never an object again. What would you do? Because you've already gone on holidays. What would you do?
What would I do? You see here's the thing about a holiday. You go, and you get bored. You want to get back to your routine. Eh? Routine's important. So you can't be on holiday all the time.
I don't like holidays.
So if I got given a billion rand, what am I going to do? Just go on holiday? No. That would be, but I would definitely, I'd buy a few fun things. I'd love to do? I'd love to get people out of trouble that I know that they're in. So like family and friends.
You mean people in financial trouble or in law trouble?
No. Financial, I'd love to see everybody that I know just very happy. Here's 2 million to everybody.
That's a good goal. So Tabo says in the comments, Elon wants power and money. Do you not think that a lot of these billionaires?
Everybody wants a lot of power. Listen, let's face it. Let's get to this. You don't have to be a billionaire. You don't. people that walk that are listening to the show right now, they're going on their way to the office. They want power and money. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
When you go to university, you want to get your degree, you want to become the best doctor, you want money to buy the nice things. You want, everyone wants power and money. Okay, majority of people. There are very few people, even the Pope, maybe to some extent. I'm not saying he wants money.
You wouldn't,
but you become a cardinal and you go into that election hoping that you're going to become the Pope.
Sure.
I mean, that's power, isn't it? Okay. And of course, there's a spiritual side to it. We're not taking that away but I'm saying the natural human being wants to have some sense of I have worth, power, I have, and money creates that as well.
Reputation. Respect.
Why wouldn't they want power and money? Everybody wants it. There are very few people say they don't want power and money. They're lying, or they are really and truly Mother Teresa's, and they just want to, you know, do good.
Magella says, according to Gareth, rich people cannot be corrupt. Of course they can. We've got a president who is.
I think they're the most corrupt.
He's a rich guy. Donald Trump has certainly been involved in extremely dodgy dealings. In fact, this plane that he's getting from Qatar, I criticized just last week. Magella, I don't think you're listening to the show very well. Or maybe with one ear, or maybe you're deaf.
And there's another piece to that, is that to often become powerful, you have to be smart, and you have to be a multi-manipulator. And to multi-manipulate, you have to do certain things.
The reason I asked that is because I've been reading something interesting that was written by a philosopher, a Christian philosopher in the sort of 1400s, about the four things that motivate people. And one of these four is always your Achilles heel for everybody, right? So it could be money, power. We've covered two of them already. The other two are reputation, stroke fame, which is, you know, if you ask anyone under the age of 25 in the world today who's got a phone,
what do you want?
They want to be famous, right?
Yeah, they want to be Cristiano Ronaldo.
Money, power, fame.
Come on, yeah.
And then the last one is pleasure or adventure, experience, which sounds good but also has a dark side. So all of them have good and bad. There's no one that's better than the others. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And I've been thinking, well, what is somebody's prime motivation? Because everyone is one of or more of, you know, one or two or three of those things in different quantities. And I'm just curious, I'm asking everybody I know, which one do you think yours is? Which one of those four makes you make bad decisions? Money, power, pleasure, reputation, fame.
Well, I think the question is what makes you make sometimes, let's reverse it.
Which one would you put at the top of your list? If you were chasing something now, money, power, pleasure, fame.
So something interesting happened. I was in a meeting, and the guy, and I just mentioned it by the bar, and the guy turned around and he said, "This is Alan Ford from Mayfair. He can organize you anything." Now, I want to just go into this a bit. So, you know, if you're in certain places, you say, "Alan Ford from Mayfair." They're, "Oh, near Cadogan Gardens. Ah, how are you?" And I go, "No, I'm from Mayfair, Joburg, where we smash you up." You know, the Libs from Joburg, from Mayfair. And I want to talk to you about this word, this thing called reputation. Because I'm very proud to come from Mayfair in Johannesburg. I'm proud that where I've come from and where my heritage lies. And so the reputation of saying I came from there and I've got to live where I am now and do what I get to do now, it is an honorable thing. So for me, reputation is very, very big. I don't even have power in that. But it speaks to my legacy. It speaks to, I think, when you lose a parent, it speaks to going, wow, this is my reputation is from a legacy that I've...
Oh, well, you bear his name, yeah.
I bear my dad's name. So there's a lot of things in that, you know. So and that's why I was so proud. And someone said, "You're a Mayfairian." Yeah, I'm like, "I'm from Mayfair."
Okay, but cool, you don't go there anymore. Mayfair's a shithole now.
No, because the church is no longer there.
But it's a shithole now.
Actually,
horrible place.
It's not great. Not great. It's still a mini Somalia. But
you're being kind. Those people are refugees.
I will tell you. Actually, not wrong. But I will tell you something interesting, though. There are two great things around Mayfair that are really things you must miss.
What, murder and rape?
No.
What?
The Oriental Plaza.
Yeah.
And then they've got...
I like the Oriental Plaza.
Fordsburg has become Foodsburg.
Oh, really?
Lots of brilliant, great restaurants. India, beautiful food. Pakistani food all down that Mint Road.
Who would have known?
Exactly. So Mayfair has still got some lovely stuff to it. And, of course, the Plaza is the best.
Well, I mean, it used to be the best until we discovered Sheen and Temu. Now we don't need to go to the Plaza anymore.
I don't even know how those things work properly. And I always think
that's a hell of a lot safer than going to the Plaza.
No, the Plaza is great. So I want to tell people, if you want to go shopping for whether you want to be high-end Bugatti clothing or beautiful.
Go there.
Khalix is still, remember Khalix? who will dress me for the SA Style Awards? It'll come from the Plaza.
Okay, let's see quickly. Common Sense says, please ask Alan if he secretly wears drag. I swear I saw him in Cape Town. Have you ever done drag, Al?
I dressed up like a woman twice. I looked quite beautiful, actually. I must tell you. I looked fabulous. And in the break, maybe I'll find the photo for you. Actually, can I tell you what happened? A well-known South African producer, director, trailblazer, David Bloch. You remember him?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
He had a birthday.
Puts on amazing events.
He had a birthday
and
party
shows,
and it was a dress-up in a drag party.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Sarah Kaminsky. I was doing Nolene show at the time, Nolene on 3Talk. And Aline gave me her weave and even her clothes because we have a similar body, funny enough.
So you dressed up as Nolene?
And Aline. And I had a weave and Sarah did my hair and makeup and I looked freaking gorgeous, like my mother. And I loved it. It was fun. That was once. The second time was I dressed up like the Queen of Hearts for a Disney party for another friend of mine. But I've only done it twice. So that's all you know.
Because you're not secretly running around Cape Town in a dress.
Yeah, okay. I'm not at the moment.
Okay, common sense, I'm
big,
sorry.
Drag is
sorry
big
to disappoint you.
Drag is big and drag is cool. I like drag. Drag's an artistry, Gareth.
I've never found it.
Can I tell you something about this? I want to speak about
it's impressive. Drag. But it's just not entertaining. It's like I don't like plays.
But I wish the greatest drag artists have been people like Evita Bassan, Peter Dirkes.
Okay? Sure.
Barry Humphries. With
sure,
Dame
of course.
Edna.
Dame Edna.
Hello, possums! The artistry of drag is absolutely...
I get it. I just don't find it as amusing as, some people don't like stand-up comedy. Some people don't like musicals. Some people don't like football. You know, it's all just a form of entertainment.
So you know, in America and around the world, they've got the RuPaul has become a now multi-million.
Massive.
Okay, they've got the drag race.
Outstanding success.
They've got
the
drag race.
Sure.
And the drag race.
Never
is
watched
the
an episode though.
Okay,
it's.
But I mean, it's won all the Emmys, year on year and year. It's one of the best reality shows. But drag is really cool. Drag is cool, and it's hard work. One day can we get a drag artist in here one day? Can I bring someone with me?
Sure. What were you going to talk about, though?
Because they're satirists.
Some of them. No. Some of them just like dressing up.
Hold on.
So a lot of them are just dressing up.
So there's a difference. I want to explain to you about this. Let me just close this here to help people understand. Majority of the drag artists that you come across have been in musical theatre schools, theatre schools. It's an artistry.
So what are you trying to say? They're mentally ill.
They're acting, maybe. aren't we all mentally ill?
No, but
isn't
I mean,
something going
you
on?
Know, musical theatre is not necessarily.
No, but that's what they do. I'm trying to say that it's a craft.
Yeah.
Okay. They have their clothes made, their weaves done. It's a specific craft, guys. It's not men just dressing up like women. This is nothing to do with transgender.
Okay, but we got onto this. I was asking you about which of those four motivations. And by the way, Congo Chris, I think it is, says here, and it's not Congo Chris. It is Congo Chris. He says, Thomas Aquinas is a hack, just repackaged Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. So that's where it comes from. But I think it does, whether it's your first encounter with this thing, maybe Thomas Aquinas or Marcus Aurelius. I think it's still interesting to try to perceive and try to divine what people's motivation is. You said it might be reputation. You spoke about Mayfair.
That's for me.
Family.
Like, reputation's big.
So, all right, but if given this option, right, I say to you, you can have $1 billion money. Mm-hmm. You can be president of this country for life. So it's equivalent to $1 billion.
It's our big king.
Sure. You'd be a king, right? But a king with power, not just a figurehead. What? You would have fame. You'd be a famous movie star or actor, singer, dancer, whatever the hell it is that you want. But you'll be well known throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And the final one would be that you would have, I don't know, the hottest boyfriend in the world and travel the world. Which one of those four would you want the most?
The king one, because you can do it all. Think about it.
So you're saying power goes power at the top of the hierarchy.
Power would give you it all. Think about it. Power would give you everything. Maybe. Power would give you the travel, the experience. I do think fame is a... Because you remember, fame and reputation, two different... Well, maybe not two different things. But, you know, Gareth, I think it must be very, very hard to... When we were on radio back in the day, I remember being on diet. And what happened was I publicly, we spoke about it on the radio show at the time. And I was losing weight, or attempting to. And I was eating chips at Maghrib. And a woman came up to me at the table and said to me, "Aren't you on diet? Is that a part of your diet?"
No, someone you didn't even know.
I didn't know who this person was. I was... So taken aback. So, you know, when fame's a dangerous thing.
Yeah, so Mapelo says in the comments here, fame scares me. Mm. I'm currently working with an international award-winning music producer and DJ. He's very successful, more than most South African artists, but he's not a celebrity. People don't care what he does.
Yeah, so DJs are different because they kind of, you don't know, you won't, if Armin van Buuren walks into the...
No, I wouldn't know
you
who
wouldn't
he
know
was,
he yeah. is.
But okay. I'd know who Black Coffee was.
Black Coffee's... But that's very South African. But someone in, for example, in London won't know who Black Coffee is, you know.
Maybe.
Okay. So it's but if Jennifer Lopez walks in, all right, or Harry Styles walks in,
that's proper fame.
That's fame. That's insanity. Michael Jackson couldn't walk leave his house. I mean, there was lunacy. So that's crazy. That's where you don't have a laugh. Imagine where the paparazzi used to follow you and the lunacy around that. So fame is
fame's not fame's, my yeah. It's not my favorite.
I mean
it's
reputation.
It's the least important there to me.
I'm talking about reputation. But I mean, do you want to be a Harry and Meghan?
Jesus, what do you think of Meghan? Because everyone else is piling in on her, and I know you'll have a different point of view on this.
Do you know what I think? Have you watched her show?
Jesus, it's awful.
Terrible.
She's awful. She's so inauthenic.
She's so inauthenic.
She's
Come
the
on.
Most
she
fake
is,
person I've
is,
ever seen. So what do you think
is
of her?
Horrid. Horrid.
What do you think?
Horrific.
Do you think she's an evil, scheming Machiavellian, or do you think that she's just self-absorbed?
Self-absorbed. I don't think they scheme. I think she comes from an American mindset, which comes from with a lot of arrogance, which comes with a lot of I want it my way. You know, I was an actress. I was famous on Suits. Damn, you had a one role as a, you were cool. Okay, you were not bad roles. She was fine. I mean, the guys in Suits were much better than she was, but to be honest. But yeah, she what does bother me about her is that she knew the role, he knew the role, and they were very quick to have that fancy wedding.
Yeah.
And to put on that Queen Victoria's tiara and walk down that with that expensive dress and to have that. You were very happy to have the royal wedding, right?
Yeah.
And the royal engagement and all that stuff, okay? And then all of a sudden, you know.
So how do you think the relationship works?
With what?
Her and Harry.
Oh, no, I think they bonk their brains out.
You think there's a lot of that?
I think they.
There's like a genuine attraction.
I think they really are. I mean, I've met him. You've met him. He's a very regular guy, but I think he's very much more the Spencer side of things, you know, because his mother was a Spencer. We know the Spencer.
Okay, but then
So I do think he doesn't fit into the cookie cutter royal mold. He did for some period of time, but I think Meghan came and took him out of that. But I think he shamed the family and the role.
Yeah.
You know, go to America and shut up. That's what you should do. Just go and shut up. You know?
They're trying to peddle.
They're peddling.
Everything.
Anything
they can get to sell their stuff.
They are refugees.
They are refugees.
They are rich refugees. Okay. I mean, they had no house. Tyler Perry had to give them a house. Okay. Think about it.
Tyler Perry had to give them a house.
Give them a house.
You're right.
Okay. And in security.
How embarrassing, actually.
Do you know that? Oh. Do you know that? And then he goes on. I love the monarchy. I love the monarchy. I love the history of the UK. I love what the Queen represented. The King has, I think, only done. I actually have loved Charles since I've watched documentaries on him. Because Gareth, the King has done incredible things. You know, the whole revolution on organic fruits and vegetables was started by him. I mean, I'm trying to tell you.
He talks to trees.
I mean, the Prince's Foundation. He saw all these people on the streets, and he got them jobs.
I like the guy,
and he's a cool guy.
Sure.
And I think William's going to be a cool king after him. Okay. His dad's got cancer. It's been a rough
road. Talk about Harry now again.
Yeah. And now he goes on the BBC to talk about security details. Spoiled brat. They're brats.
Brats. And there we go.
And she's a brat, and he's a brat. And playing race cards, and then playing the death of my mother card, and playing the victim mentality.
That's it.
Yeah, you can't. They're based, and they're refugees.
Okay, so here's something interesting. Meghan, as insufferable as she is still quite attractive, says Carl.
Nothing wrong.
Old Rusty Roof is actually punching above his weight.
Listen, I find him, he's still attractive. Nothing wrong with him. I mean, you know, it's nothing like there's a ginger there. It's nothing wrong with a guy. I think it's one of the best looking gingers there've been in.
Chris Smith said it's as bad as the Gupta wedding, watching that Harry Meghan wedding. I don't know about that. At least it wasn't. At least they weren't flown into our country and
took over Sun City.
Over Sun City and treated the waiters very badly.
Those Guptas were rubbishes.
You know, terrible.
You know, they were dread. Actually, do you know the three of them? And do you know that I was one of the first people to meet the Guptas in
really?
South Africa?
Okay, wait. We got to hold that story. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment. Alan Ford is with us. We're having a bit of a mad Wednesday here. Let us know what's going on in the comments. Join us on YouTube, like, subscribe, etc., etc. And we will be back in just a moment. Don't go away.